on this episode of African Retooled.
It was at that point when I really started to look into this more and question why we were depicted worldwide in such a negative manner, and what do I need to do to change that? What can I do with my passion and love for communications and storytelling and creativity? What can I do within this space to represent where I'm from?
Do you have the tools to face the future? Welcome to African Retooled, a podcast where Chris and Martin, two African recruiters, will explore the changing world of work.
Where students come to learn and gain insights into the world of work, discover how they can continue to tool themselves with skills of the future. Where managers will explore with us how to confidently navigate the complexities of future work in order to be key disruption agents and remain competitive. Where CEOs, business owners come to understand the evolution of work, allowing them to leverage on emerging roles and remain competitive and achieve their objectives.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome yet again to another installment of African Retooled. I'm here with Chris.
You are here with yourself.
I'm here with myself, Chris. Yes, so this is Martin.
And Chris, it's really nice to be back on the show. Always a pleasure, Martin, having these conversations.
Indeed.
And today we're having a very interesting conversation. A slight detour from our usual conversations. What's that about?
Well, it's a detour, but it's actually going back to our ethos, the ethos of African Retooled.
Right. And what's that exactly?
That is the fact that Africans, as a people, need to start rethinking about where they're coming from so that they can define their own futures. I mean, for a long time, we've had this conversation around, let's wait to see what the West is doing and then ask them to help us to do what they've done.
Right.
But guys, we can do exactly what we need to do right here. Absolutely. We are the ones who have the solutions for our own problems.
Our own problems. And exactly. And if you look at African Retooled's logo, we've never talked about this, but it's almost looks like a bulb.
Yes.
And it's yellow. Mm-hmm. And the oxymoron is Africa is considered the dark continent.
Yep.
So we are always considered as the last. And whenever you're discussing about the future and modernization or improvements, technology especially. And so African Retooled is confidently leading the charge with conversations on how can Africans actually retool themselves? How can we prepare ourselves for this imminent disruption at the workplace? And not just the workplace, but in life. How do you keep yourself relevant? And it's hard enough to retool yourself because of the constant change and the speed of it. And let alone being in Africa, where there's a lot of challenges we have, inherent challenges. But how can you still rise above all of that?
Exactly.
And there are individuals who we know of and who we'll continue to find who have done it successfully.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think we have one such person with us.
Exactly. We are very privileged to have today with us someone who is a cultural ambassador. She's a Pan-Africanist. She's a movement all to herself.
Wow, a dynamo.
I'm telling you.
Right.
Wow. Please welcome to the show today, Rozan Ahmed. Rozan, I don't think any introduction I would have done would have fitted you. And I think, guys, once you go out there and check out who she is, you'll understand why I'm saying this. So please, Rozan, tell us who you are.
Wow. First of all, thank you for the wonderful attempted introduction.
Attempted.
I mean, it was fairly accurate. I mean, I won't take away from anything. But yeah, first of all, thank you for having me. And thank you for creating this space. It's crucial, particularly at this time of new dawn. How do I describe who I am? Yeah, that's always been a really difficult one.
Yeah.
I believe I'm a catalyst in many ways because I really believe that one, development starts in conversation. So I do the best I can to utilize as many tools as possible to trigger that first step, to trigger conversation, to shift in thinking, to apply questions to pretty much every area of why we function the way that we do. right? Why do we look at certain situations or realities in the way that we do? What influences us? What saturates us? And yeah, so I think Catalyst is a good one. I believe in the power of creativity. Mm-hmm. And it's because of that, that those tools that I mentioned and that I use are creatively inclined. My background is pretty varied, but sits in that core of communication, storytelling, shifting perspectives, and also not only owning your story, but discovering your story first, which is really how I look upon the kind of African rhetoric right now. And that's own your story or own, we must own, we must own. But, you know, first of all, what is it that we're owning? Who are we as Africans? What does it mean? You know, if you look at tags around the world, made in Paris or made in Taiwan or made in China, that immediately creates a picture. But I feel that made in Africa or made in Kenya, you know, it still needs work. It mm-hmm. still needs, I don't even know what kind of story or what immediate picture comes into my mind when I hear that phrase. So I think, yeah, I am a catalyst. I enjoy the power in triggering thought, and I use every tool imaginable through my cultural diplomacy to bring about a new confidence, a new self-appreciation, and to really kind of surge this new way of African being.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In our attempt to understand who Rozanne is better, we came across your background, i.e., where you're from, and I found it quite interesting. Mm. And you didn't grow up here in Africa, did you?
No, not during my formative years.
Right.
Yeah, I guess a bit of a global refugee. I was born in the UK, so I'm very much a West London girl. At around about the age of 3, we went to Kuwait. And my father's a doctor, and he'd got a placement there. But then the Gulf War broke out when I was about 8 or 9. And as a result of the Gulf War, we were literally refugees. It was a pretty horrific experience. And to this day, I'm still like fascinated by how gracefully my mom and dad handled the reality of losing their home, losing just everything. They lost everything. And we didn't ever feel so discombobulated, like, or as discombobulated as we should have been. Mm-hmm. You know, they managed to handle that tragedy with so much grace. And then, yeah, anyway, after Kuwait, we went back to the UK, and I stayed in the UK until I was about 22, 23. Mm. And after that, I joined the United Nations and became a global citizen in every sense of the word. In every sense of the word, yeah. Because physically, I became more global. But I think growing up, internally, I was already global, but I didn't understand that. And it's because of that that I grew up with a bit of a crisis by way of identity. I never felt Sudanese enough or English enough or Arab enough or African enough. So it was tough. And it wasn't until I understood who I was as a Sudanese woman prior to any kind of invasion or violence, cultural violence, religious violence, attack, intervention, you name it, we've gone through it as a continent. So I really, really went back and discovered a lot about my Nilotic history, mm-hmm. Pharaonic history, Kemetic, all these different labels for it. Sudanese history, that's really what it is.
Right.
And it wasn't until that rediscovery of myself that I realized I am not someone who doesn't belong anywhere. I am someone that belongs everywhere. And I think that that's something that a lot of us as Africans need to embrace, that we are, unfortunately or fortunately, due to what we've been through as a people, we are now at a point of globalization internally. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something we should take full advantage of.
Yeah. There's so many interesting points you've just brought out there. Mm. And I agree with you that, you know, to move forward, you have to understand and appreciate where you're coming from.
Absolutely.
And that's what even in retooling or redesigning or rethinking who we are, mm-hmm. we need to have that great appreciation of who am I? What's my departure point? And I feel like we can define that for ourselves. We don't have to wait for someone else to define it. And that has been the crisis, I feel, that as a continent we've been going through. We're like, who is defining Africa? Is it Nigeria? Is it Kenya? Is it South Africa?
Exactly.
You know? Mm. But why can't we just have, you know, what you have been calling Africanism?
Yes.
Where, you know, there are things about Nigeria that we can share across the continent. There are things about Kenya that we can share across the continent.
Right.
And so from that perspective, you being out there, having this look into Africa, the sort of gaps you've been able to see, maybe you could share some of those with us. And you know, you coming back to, no, I don't know how to call it back to the continent, but you coming to work on the continent.
The return.
The return.
The grand return.
The grand return. What has instigated that?
That's a really good question. So my dissertation, when I was at university, was titled Western Media and the Muslim Post 9/11, right? So the reason why I did that was because it was so interesting to me as a London girl at the time, the stark shift in how Muslims were reported pre and post 9/11. I was fascinated because before, there didn't even really seem to be much focus on religion, period. You know, if there was a story on a particular individual, their religion wasn't even an issue as much or anywhere near as much. And then following 9/11, I noticed that there was like this derogatory chase of Islam that started happening in the media. And as somebody that constantly questions everything, like growing up, I was always considered the distraction of the class. Like that was on my report card. She talks too much. She asks too many questions. She this, she that. So I've always been very curious and I always question. So it was that dissertation that then got me thinking about more analytically about my continent. Because growing up, you know, I would go back home every year. We default had to go back to Sudan every year and visit family. And it was never as bad of an experience as was depicted on TV at the dark continent, as you mentioned, poverty and starvation and this. And I was like, well, I'm African and I don't have that bad of a time when I go over there. So, but I was so young, so it wasn't until I worked on this that I realized analytically that there's a problem here. There's some kind of mismatch in the realities of what happens on a day-to-day in Africa. Yes, we suffer from poverty, but at the same time, we have amassed and live in such beauty and such God-given blessings by way of nature and resources and food. So I just, it was at that point when I really started to look into this more and question why we were depicted worldwide in such a negative manner, and what do I need to do to change that? What can I do with my passion and love for communications and storytelling and creativity? What can I do within this space to represent where I'm from?
Very interesting. And and I guess my question to you is then, what then drives you? Because it's a challenging feat to take on. Mm-hmm. Because you're probably not the only one seeing this, but what then gave you the drive to do this and to take on such a huge task?
I don't even know how to answer that. I ask myself that question every day. As cheesy as it sounds, I feel like it's a calling. Mm-hmm. Because as much as I want to give up, because like you said, challenges constant challenges, and not just from, you know, the typical white supremacy ideas that come about. I mean, there's a lot of sabotage amongst us.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of that amongst us. There's the diaspora support, but then there's also total lack of knowledge when it comes to certain individuals in the diaspora that speak of our continent and have no experience of our continent. So there are so many different challenges that come up every day, from substantive challenges, logistical challenges. I also, at one point pre-COVID, had to be in a million different places at one time because there was this like demand for my mind when it comes to strategic and creative execution mm-hmm. of ideas and plans and whatnot. So yeah, it's really a calling because it is challenging. What I'm loving at the moment is that there is absolutely a renaissance ongoing on the continent, a beautiful renaissance. And now at this point in history, there's even a cry, a revolutionary cry for social justice, for the end to corruption. People, I think, have reached a boiling point when it comes to the hilarity that we have for so-called leadership. And I think that we are at a very exciting, pivotal point. The key right now is to ensure that these emotions are steered with intellect and with skills, which is why I really believe in what you have created as a platform and a space. And in development, because we are an orally driven people, uh-huh. African people, our history is based on just orally passing information. Mm-hmm. And it's because of that habit that we have as a people that we must refer to our good elders, mm-hmm. yes. our good elders. Yeah. Our competent, decent elders. Yeah.
Our good elders.
Not the ones who drink from my tribe. We call it busa.
Yeah. not the ones that like to shoot their own children.
Right.
As a case in point, Nigeria.
Mm. Yeah.
My country too. My former government as well. Not the ones that will shoot and kill their own children for money. Mm. So yes, our good elders, I really believe that they must be a point of reference for us as we move forward.
Yeah.
And I'm excited.
No, you're absolutely right. And you know, you talked about the Renaissance, and I'm a lover of history. And you talk about the Renaissance, and I think about the rebirth of Europe in the 14th century. You know,
yes.
it is really around culture, art.
Yes.
And these are some of the things you're doing.
Yes.
Using art and culture to drive this change. I was thinking it's a good time to talk to us about some of the projects you're doing. We've seen the Magic Drive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about that and how you're using that to drive this change. Mm.
Thank you for bringing that project up because it's my favorite one.
Right.
The Magic Drive is really an amalgamation of all my passions, which, you know, include arts, culture, fashion, music, art, giving, social responsibility. I really am doing what I can at the moment to advocate and direct attention towards the possibility of giving within the creative space. There's a lot of mistrust at the moment with these larger institutions that come in and claim to help when we all know what they're really doing, and that is stealing a lot of money and actually being entirely unproductive or useful on the ground. So because this mistrust, and it's growing, 2020 is really a time of exposure on every level. I feel like it is exposing the good, exposing the bad, you know, dismantling facades. There's a lot of that happening at the moment. And because of that, I started the Magic Drive as a small, independent, powerful force to ignite confidence and self-appreciation amongst young people. Because we talk of the Renaissance, we talk of, you know, the working spheres that are growing on the continent. We talk of retooling ourselves as individuals. All of these elements start with the mind.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with your attitude and your approach. And that is where I begin with the Magic Drive, that is igniting or reigniting young minds into understanding their power and the power of their immediate vicinity. When I speak of self, I don't speak of you in physical body only. Mm-hmm. I speak of what is immediately surrounding you. What can you do to improve your community as an individual? So these are using fashion, because again, you know, creativity is a lot more powerful than people would like to think. You know, of course, arts and culture as a space is considered oddly a soft power. It is not. It is not a soft power. It is a superpower. Because what does it do? It affects your mind first. So using the immediate transformational power of clothing, you know, when you put on a nice suit, or if, you know, I put on a nice dress, it'll immediately you'll sit up better. You'll find yourself even speaking better, more confident. So it's tapping into that and creating an immediate change in approach.
I mean, you're doing exactly what they did in the actual original Renaissance.
Yes.
You know, it was really about new way of talking, new way of drawing, new way of architecture. So yes, absolutely. And I see the power in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, so you're doing this mostly with young people?
Yes, we work with impoverished schools, orphanages, children's homes. Mm-hmm. And also we work with art centers in impoverished areas.
Right.
So, and there's a number here in Kenya. And I've seen incredible, incredible art being produced by young, like kids who, you know, live in squalor pretty much. Mm-hmm. And they're, it's the some of the best art I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
So it's not just inspiring one way. It is inspiring. This is an experience or a power program, as I like to call. I tend to move away from the word charity because it's inspiring both ways. Mm-hmm. You know, every activation I work on, I leave inspired, invigorated, happy, joyful, you know, ready to take on the world again. Yeah. So it goes both ways.
Yeah. I'm beginning to see a movement of, you talked about our stories being orally passed from generation to generation, mm-hmm. but I'm beginning to see a movement of people actually capturing these stories and writing about them.
Indeed.
Because a lot of times, a lot of our stories have been captured by the West
yep.
in their own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm beginning to see, even the other day, Google launched something at the museum in Nairobi, mm-hmm. and they were actually showcasing some of our heroes from the different tribes.
Yeah.
So I think that's really, and it's around art, it's around culture.
Yeah.
So it's a very powerful area that you've tapped into.
Yeah, it's crucial now that we have considered documenting.
Yes.
As a people. It is happening. It's all part of this African Renaissance, mm-hmm, as I like to call. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Documentation is key. And there's also, of course, you know, contributing to that is the digital wave
that's
cutting across the continent. Kenya, one of the leaders, mm-hmm. Well, the kings generally. This is an acronym I heard recently by a real techie. So the kings.
Uh-huh. Is that Kenya, Nigeria, and who?
Kenya, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana, and Senegal.
Right. Uh-huh.
So you guys are the five leading nations, mm-hmm. African nations, when it comes to tech.
Right.
According to the guy I met the other day.
He's right.
Yeah, he's right. He's right.
And it starts with Kenya, you see?
Yeah, exactly. It starts with Kenya. I know, and it's true. Like, for me, the technocrat community in Kenya is so impressive.
It's vibrant.
And I know for a fact that Silicon Valley are paying very close attention to the movements ongoing here. I mean, M-Pesa by itself it's a phenomenal software that has come about and has empowered so many people. So yeah, more claps to you.
This is African Retooled.
You talk about digital, and I think one of the reasons we know of you is because of a digital platform.
Mm-hmm.
You are some superstar on Instagram. So how are you leveraging social media to drive your agenda and talk about what you're doing?
And that's another very good question. I choose to be very careful with socials. At the same time, however, I also like to be real on there. Mm. And that's a fine line. I don't know. Social media for me is both so wonderful and so dangerous at the same time. You know, wonderful in the sense that, you know, so many of us are able to connect better, expose, you know, take control of our stories and depict them in the way, in ways that we organize, we prepare, we present. You know, it's we have control, but then at the same time, you know, particularly when it comes to the creative, the CCI, creative and cultural industries, it's become a cesspool for IP theft.
Mm.
So, you know, there's, it's a gift and a curse. Me personally, I know who watches me on social media, and it's a lot of very young people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of that that I feel we have to take responsibility in how, not only how we present ourselves, but how we present our continent. So yeah, I'm careful. I enjoy Instagram in particular. I share my memes. I show many sides of me as well, because, you know, for some reason, my success is intimidating to some. I don't want to be intimidating. I thrive through humans. So I love to meet with people and talk to people. And it's a conundrum. I really have a love-hate relationship with social media. I'm not going to lie to you.
But has it been effective in helping you achieve any of your objectives?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah? A prime example of how useful social media has been in my vision,
mm-hmm,
is, so I decided a few years ago to start a page dedicated to Sudan. So I got the @Sudan, and that page has now become the encyclopedia of Sudan for a lot of the Gen Z, the Generation Z.
Wow.
And it's because one of the biggest aha, like what moments I had was that a lot of young people, a large majority of Gen Z, reference Instagram for pretty much everything, for news, for, you know, for information, for any kind of information they need, for food, for celebrity. It's become a modern day encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to use Instagram as a tool to kind of re-educate, reintroduce, show off a totally other perspective, a beautiful perspective of my nation.
Yeah.
And the reason why I've always done this is because I come across diaspora, African diaspora, Sudanese, even Sudanese, who have no clue about the beauty, the goodness, the culture, the food, you know, all of these incredible, how we get married, the music we listen to. You know, there are just so many beautiful entities to my country that were just never put out.
Yeah.
So that's what I used Instagram for.
I came across interesting story around the Kingdom of the Kush.
Yes.
And the fact that they, in Egypt, borrowed heavily from the Kingdom of the Kush.
Right.
And the pyramids
older.
And yeah, they were the more advanced civilization.
Yes.
So
yes, we ruled Egypt for a long time.
I had no idea.
And
this is not stuff your everyday African knows.
No.
Yep.
No. Yeah, it's not even the everyday African. That's the crazy thing. Like the everyday Sudanese isn't aware, you know? And I went to the pyramids for the first time when I was 19 in Sudan. I was only 19, and I went on my own. No one wanted to go with me, you know. And ever since we opened the @Sudan page about 4 years ago, visits to the pyramids have gone up maybe 300 times.
What?
Uh-huh. Now it's become a staple visit, a staple place to go. I've had Sudanese artists from the U.S., DM us on the Sudan page and ask for more information. And one artist used it on their artwork for their music. There's just been, I'm not saying that my page on Instagram alone has like reignited a revival for reignited love for the country. Not at all. We also went through a 12-month revolution.
Absolutely.
Which resurrected and brought about new creative experimentation and expression, and it was just incredible. But I do feel that my page, the Sudan page, the internet, Instagram has played a big role in not just reintroducing my nation, but at the same time reigniting a newfound love for the nation.
Wow.
So yes, it's a powerful tool. It really is. It really is.
I'm just wondering, can this be replicated then across Africa?
I'm sure it can.
I'm sure it can. I'm sure it can. I don't know if Nigerians need to love themselves more than they already do. No,
I think everyone needs to love themselves like the Nigerians do.
Everyone. I'm agreeing with that.
It's honestly, again, down history lane, Nigeria, we have no idea that a lot of the slavery started off in Nigeria.
Yeah.
You know?
And Calabar.
And, yeah, the Calabar and the Bagdari, you know, and we just don't know all this history, you know, and how, unfortunately, some people really plundered, and so it's just interesting that if the young Nigerian knew the power of Nigeria and where we've come from, the kind of what that would ignite. I like the fact that you're a catalyst, so sharing those stories and bringing them down to the everyday young person, and then making them see and know themselves.
That's it.
Yuval Harari talks about the fact that when you, we're getting to a point where you need to know yourself because there'll be so many forces coming at you in the form of Facebooks and all these social media. So that'll make you think that what you're doing is actually driven by what you want to do, but it's actually them with like little marionette, you know.
Yeah,
just,
it's called programming for a reason.
There you go. So the knowledge of self is really the foundation of moving forward.
Oh, absolutely. It changed my life.
It changed my life.
And I'm glad you brought up Yuval, because then he also talks about in this emerging or changing world that we're living in, and this whole thing around the cognitive revolution, which is also the fourth IR. He talks about this useless class, which is people who are not adopting and adapting to the whole digital wave as it was.
The useless class.
Yes, that's what they'll become. You know, if you're resistant to change.
Wow.
And so he puts it out there just like that, like, yeah, I've said it. Yeah. What you going to do about it?
I know. Is that what I said?
Yep. And which now comes to the whole story around retooling and reimagining and rethinking everything we've known. You know, we've talked about where our departure point is, so we know where we are. And there's something interesting. When we talked the other day, there's a phrase that was used on you and to describe you, which was multipotentialites.
Yes.
And you know, that then, that was really interesting conversation, because I feel like that's what Yuval was trying to lead to, or
but
to allure to,
that
we
like
all
that.
Need to be like that.
We do.
And you are that person.
Yeah.
And on top of that, there's this whole story around how, you know, the journey of retooling yourself is not an easy one.
Not in the slightest.
People think like, okay, I just wake up, do a course, and I'm good. But you've had this experience around having to learn yourself.
Relearn
yourself. Mm. Maybe you could share with us what that journey was like.
It's a continuing journey, first of all. I feel like it's a never-ending process.
Absolutely.
As I mentioned earlier, it kind of started in my late teens when I wanted to find out who we were as Sudanese people prior to all of these hindrances that came upon us. It started there, but then it's always evolved. Another key point was when I went to Burning Man for the first time, funnily enough. And it was at Burning Man where... do you know what Burning Man is, by the way?
Yes, I do. But for our listeners, please go ahead and tell people what it's all about.
So Burning Man is a gathering of individuals. I believe it was started by Silicon Valley guys, like tech billionaires or something. I know that it has a tech background, but then it's now evolved into this gathering of, I suppose, artistically driven individuals, but at the same time, just a lot of people that want to have fun for a week. Mm-hmm. But the crux,
out in the desert.
Yeah, and it's out in the desert in Black Rock City in Nevada in the United States, and it's just a week long desert experience full of art and music, And what one is supposed to do at Burning Man is get lost in order to find themselves. That's the whole point. Mm. Yeah, there's no money. There's no money there either. Everything is through exchange. So, you know, if you run out of water and need some water and I need some food, then we'll swap like that, or we'll gift each other. Everyone is supposed to come with gifting and we gift one another. It's a really beautiful concept, although I did find the location a little crazy. It was just so uncomfortable. So it was at Burning Man where a lot of fear I had within me about so many things just vanished. And it was from there that I went and spent 5 months with Dr. Sebi. Mm. And Dr. Sebi is, for those who don't know, is a holistic, plant-based doctor. And he was another kind of 360 change transformation in my life, because I realized that toxicity, mental toxicity, and physical acidity go hand in hand. So by physical acidity, I mean consuming acidic foods that cause acid buildup in the body. And then, of course, consuming toxic information, like untrue, hurtful, derogatory. Like, people don't realize the trauma around constantly reading that where you come from is awful. Like, there's trauma to that. So putting these two things together kind of ignited something new in me in terms of relearning, understanding what's good for me to consume by way of food, what's good for me to consume for my mind. So yeah, that was a real turning point in this journey of retooling. But it is a constant process. COVID was another big moment in terms of retooling. I realized that a lot of the things I want to do isn't so much about wanting, but needing. I realized that I need to do what I want to do for my health, my mental health, my physical health. One of the things is spending more time in Kenya. Kenya is a place that brings me peace. Kenya has clean air, which is a blessing that so many Kenyans don't understand even. Mm-hmm. I guess because it's a given, because it's, you know, you wake up every day with the freshest air in the world. Like I've read a report that specifies that Kenya has the cleanest air in the world.
Wow.
So it's just blessings like that I feel I need to be around. It's not a case of wanting anymore.
Wow. I feel like we need to open the windows now.
Yeah.
Hello, that clean
and enjoy.
And we should bottle it for the world, huh?
Yeah.
That's right.
By the way, there's I saw somewhere that they actually do sell clean air. There's a company that sells clean air. And I think, I don't know, a bunch of LA people fell for it. But literally air. Like, air has been packaged. Right. But truly, that Kenya is such a blessed,
yeah,
a blessed country. Mm-hmm. Like, just ready to be utilized, yeah, and brought to new levels of power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From a cultural perspective, mm-hmm, I think that's really the springboard for everything, mm-hmm, not just cultural, actually the whole CCI discussion. Because if we're able to write music, we're able to design garments,
mm-hmm,
that then speak to who we are and define what we are talking about. I remember we also talked about the whole hair story.
Yes.
And then who defines beauty?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you then propagate that? And, you know, we're talking about how weaves and wigs were actually something we did already.
Yes.
As Africans. And yes, there was a purpose behind that.
Yes.
And having these stories talked about, there's a phrase that you have mentioned in one of your articles: modernization is not westernization.
Exactly that.
And I think, again, CCI, biggest platform to drive this.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a fantastic thing you're doing. As African Retooled, we'd love to tell the stories of more Africans who are retooling, whether they're in Africa, they're out of Africa. And so this is such a great opportunity just to download all your thoughts.
thank you again.
In this space.
Yeah.
I don't know, Chris, do you have...
No, I mean, this has been fascinating, just meeting people who are actually doing great stuff.
Mm.
And really, we are inspired, which is why we had to catch you when we heard you in Kenya.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and we look forward to working with you more in the future.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. I mean, as powerful and as important CCI is, there's no moving with CCI unless there is skill set, unless there's development, unless there's job creation. So, you know, the multi-potential is multi-discipline, and multi-discipline is understanding that we need to be multi in our growth. It's the presidential kind of view on things. That's how I take it. I just feel like I'm the president of my own world.
Right.
And with that presidential standpoint, you know, we look at varying industries and how they can all help one another.
Yeah.
So I'm again very grateful. Thank you for this, and thank you for all that you do.
You're most welcome. No, just before we let you go, I remember you you talked about this being a calling for you.
Yeah.
And how
I don't know if that's good or bad. It's an exhausting calling, man.
Yeah. So I've always had this thought
and of
building this utopian world, Chris, where people work from their calling, and the purpose of work is then found in your calling. Like if I had my way, if you're a doctor, you'd not work for pay. You'd not work for currency, but you'd lack nothing.
Yes.
Like as a government in a policy, we say, if you're studying to be a doctor, it's not about the amount of money you're getting out of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's because you actually want to help, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so these are key things that even as a government policy, you decide in our country, these are the core fundamentals we're going to have.
Yes.
Healthcare, education, and culture.
Mm.
And we say, okay, if you're going to study for medicine, you're going to be the best you can be. And anything you need a house, you get married, you have kids, none of them will want for anything.
You should run and become president.
Yeah, I'm not voting though. I know too much about him.
No, but honestly, what an ideal way of being and living.
Absolutely.
And I mean, you've highlighted an ideal scenario, and that is the work that we must do. Because sustainability is, I don't know, it's such a buzzword right now, but I feel the focus of quote-unquote sustainability is constantly kind of just in places that aren't so important as, you know, how do we live?
Yes.
Like, I think that's what it is, really. It's like, how and what do we live for? So these are the real questions that should surround the buzzword.
Knowledge of self.
Really. Yeah, knowledge of self. That's where it's at. Yep. So thank you very much for coming through. We really appreciate this. We really appreciate your time. We can't wait to have you again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And even on wider panel discussions.
Absolutely, yes.
That would be great.
The isms.
Yes.
The isms of Africanism.
The isms.
Continued.
I like that. I like that. All right.
Okay.
And we are out.
Thank you for listening in. Go ahead now and subscribe to African Retooled on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, or your favorite podcast directory. We're excited to hear from you. Send your comments and questions to africanretooled@gmail.com or reach us on Twitter and Instagram on African Retooled. Until then, keep learning, keep growing, keep retooling.